This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I'm visiting with Tom Jossen of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, a senior fellow. He and Bill Raggio and their colleagues keep the Long War Journal, which is a chronicle of the vast canvas of the Umad, where the jihadists range and recruit and are successful, especially no more so than in Afghanistan. We're observing what now for Afghanistan, but for the region, Eurasia. We can cite Moscow and Beijing and Delhi, all gravely concerned. Let's throw in, not throw in, let's mention Islamabad, which is compromised because its state security has used the Taliban and its recruiting power over the years to turn those suicide killers against India, against its neighbor and perpetual rival, India in the subcontinent. But now we turn to the much darker story to tell and harder to see, Al-Qaeda. Tom, you and Bill and your colleagues over the years have made it very clear that Al-Qaeda never departed from Afghanistan, that all of the Taliban successes are integrated into the Al-Qaeda network, Al-Qaeda command, the resources, the recruiting. You mentioned just as a matter of fact how much of the Taliban is recruited from the stands and from other parts of the world. This is an international organization. Al-Qaeda makes that all possible because of its theology. You have a new piece about Al-Qaeda and its ability to threaten and project power, and not only in the region, but outside the region. And what we're looking at here is not just Al-Qaeda, but also Iran. This is where you need a scorecard, which is why you need the Long War Journal. John has mentioned Russia, Tajikistan, China, Pakistan, India. Now we're plunging into Iran. What is the benefit to Iran to assist Al-Qaeda? And what does it look like now, Tom, your new piece at the Dispatch?
Well, John, the piece of the Dispatch that I wrote deals with last week, federal prosecutors revealed that there was this kidnapping plot that was targeting Masih Ahmadinejad, who is a very colorful and intelligent human rights activist who's long opposed to the Iranian regime. That's the regime that controls her native country. And she's done so at great personal risk. Her family in Iran has been harassed and imprisoned by the Iranian intelligence and Iranian security forces. There's been threats against her and her life. And she's a very, brave advocate against the Iranian regime. Well, it turns out that in the Iranian regime has been trying to basically net her since 2018. They first went to her family in an attempt to pay her family to lure her to a third country where she would be kidnapped and then deported to Iran. Then that didn't work because her family remained steadfast. So in 2020, they came up with this idea that they were going to use networks inside the U.S. to first spy on her in her home in Brooklyn using high definition cameras and other high tech equipment. And they were going to spy on her and eventually hope that they were going to kidnap her and abscond with her either to Venezuela or somewhere else and then ultimately on to Iran where she would have been imprisoned and likely killed. The FBI and American officials got wind of this plot and they were able to help her thwart it and they were able to protect her and protect her family. But it shows that the Iranians who continue with this plot all the way to this year in 2021 were deadly serious about trying to use their networks inside the U.S., inside New York City, to come get her and to take her out of the country, which would have been quite the spectacle, of course, and horrific. Well, in the piece I wrote about this Ministry of Intelligence and Security for Iran, which is the main intelligence arm of the Iranian regime, and in addition to hunting Iranian dissidents, which is one of their specialties, they also harbor and have provided travel facilitation for Al-Qaeda. And this is something that was revealed during the Obama administration in a designation by the U.S. Treasury Department in 2012, where they described the evidence that the U.S. government has accumulated against the MOIS, that's the Ministry of Intelligence and Security, and they described how at times this Iranian intelligence arm would provide passports and facilitate the movements of Al-Qaeda around the globe. And so what I wanted to do was highlight or juxtapose these two things. On the one hand, the Iranian intelligence is trying to hunt down someone who's advocating for freedom and advocating on behalf of human rights like Masih Ahmadinejad, while on the other hand is harboring and facilitating the movements of terrorists like Al-Qaeda.
All right, Tom, now I want to put these puzzles together. Al-Qaeda is intimately involved in the Taliban's successes. Afghanistan borders Iran. Do we have an understanding of how Iran's state security has used Al-Qaeda, has used the Taliban's offensive, has used this integration over these years, not just now, but since the turn of the century, 20 years. Is there a clear chain of command, or are these all opportunities that spring up and they're operations that are separate from a working together?
You know, they're not wholly separate. There is overlap here. You know, one of the things that was revealed in this series of designations that have been put out by the U.S. Treasury Department and the State Department is that the Iranian government allows Al-Qaeda to maintain its core facilitation pipeline. That was a phrase that became popular during the Obama years inside Iran. And what this core facilitation pipeline does is, on the one hand, it moves messages and money and fighters out of South Asia, out of Afghanistan and Pakistan to other places, but also moves those same things, money, communications and fighters, into South Asia. And so this facilitation pipeline has been essential for Al-Qaeda in terms of managing its affairs globally. And a part of that story is, of course, the war fighting in Afghanistan. So this facilitation hub that the Iranians allow Al-Qaeda to maintain has been essential for Al-Qaeda to maintain its role in the war in Afghanistan while also directing plots and war fighting elsewhere.
Let's go back to India. This is another headline within these last days from the India Blooms website. Experts believe Al-Qaeda may make swift return to Afghanistan as Taliban surges ahead. The imminent fall of Afghanistan is more than a national disaster, writes the editorialist. It is not just that the gains made in the past two decades at the cost of tens of thousands of lives and trillions of dollars look certain to be reversed. The Taliban's victory is also an Al-Qaeda victory, and it has global implications. I believe your page would embrace that opinion, but again, India is alarmed, Tom, and they're alarmed because I have to believe that they're knowledgeable that Al-Qaeda never left Afghanistan, never left Pakistan, and is part of the threat tool for their rivals in Pakistan. So just as it's murky to say how Iran works with Taliban and Al-Qaeda, is it also murky to say how Pakistan works with Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, or is that a more clear command structure?
Well, it's clear that Al-Qaeda never left Afghanistan, as you tease there, John. I do think you're going to see foreign fighters from Al-Qaeda and others who have been dispatched around the globe and operating elsewhere probably will make their way back to Afghanistan in the coming weeks and months if they haven't already. I think we've already seen some indications of that from Syria and elsewhere. However, Al-Qaeda always maintained its networks and its prominent role in the war fighting underneath the Taliban's banner in Afghanistan. This is one of the main things the U.S. got wrong, was an understanding of what Al-Qaeda was actually doing in Afghanistan. When it comes to Pakistan, what they've done is, I describe it as a wheel of jihad, John. And so think about this wheel as on the top part of it, you have the Inter-Services Intelligence Directorate of the Pakistani military, which is the main military intelligence arm of Pakistan. They've been deeply in bed with the Afghan Taliban and the Haqqanis, who are in turn deeply in bed with Al-Qaeda and the Pakistani Taliban, which comes back to attack the Pakistani state. And so this is one of the areas where it's very intriguing to watch in the months to come if perhaps Pakistan has miscalculated here to some extent, because the same jihadis that they are supporting in Afghanistan against the Afghan government are deeply in bed with jihadis who are actually targeting the Pakistani state itself.
The concern then in India is not just about the Taliban, it's Al-Qaeda. Very early on in the war, 20 years ago, Al-Qaeda launched an attack on the India Congress. We all remember it vividly, so does India. Do we expect India to have an ability to be proactive with the return of the Al-Qaeda networks in Pakistan and Afghanistan? Are we going to look at an increase of border conflict? Do we have any opinion at this point of how Al-Qaeda is going to take this victory and go forward with it?
Well, in terms of Al-Qaeda, we already know they've positioned their literature in Urdu and other regional languages, basically to have a focus on India and the Indian subcontinent. We've been watching that for now over a year, where they've already been telegraphing the fact that they're going to do more in India and elsewhere. Now, of course, you mentioned the attack on the Indian parliament in December of 2001. There are some indications that Al-Qaeda actually had a heavy hand in that, and that was intended to just basically distract Pakistan and distract the U.S. in India from the flight of Al-Qaeda members, including bin Laden, out of the Tora Bora Mountains. There's some evidence along those lines, although it's not at all clear. Then, of course, there's some evidence and some reporting that Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda had a hand in the Mumbai attacks in November 2008, which was the siege. John, this is one of the types of attacks that I tell people I'd be most concerned about being replicated in New York City or elsewhere, because it is fairly easy to replicate. It's something that the main guy who did the surveillance for it, David Headley, an American, actually was also reporting to Osama bin Laden through the chain of command, and some of his surveillance reports and other intelligence he accumulated ended up in bin Laden's compound. So this is one of those things where Al-Qaeda had a hand, we suspect, in the Mumbai attacks in November 2008, and probably had a hand in this December 2001 plot. It probably had a hand in other hijacking plots going back to the 1990s and other operations. I don't think there's any doubt that they're going to have a go of it here in India in the future. In fact, as I mentioned earlier, over the last week, there's been some reporting that this Al-Qaeda-affiliated outfit in Kashmir has been plotting suicide bombings in India, and that Indian police and security forces just swept up a cell that was responsible for executing that plot.
ISIS. It's not finally ISIS. It's just that I have little information about ISIS because it's been operating in this region for some time, for some years. However, we're told that ISIS and Al-Qaeda are at loggerheads, not working together. We're told that ISIS does not work with the Taliban. Do we have any clarity, Tom, now that the U.S. is withdrawn? Is ISIS a power or is it a boutique?
Well, you know, most of our attention is focused on the Al-Qaeda-Taliban nexus because they're the ones who are really threatening the Afghan state and threatening to take over much, if not all, the country. But ISIS still has a prolific terrorist outfit, I would say. So this is something ISIS has already demonstrated, has the capability of operating in Pakistan, capability of operating in Afghanistan, Tajikistan, and they've been trying to carve out their own, and they have carved out their own cadre of Central Asian jihadists themselves that they want to use and repurpose for plots elsewhere. So ISIS is definitely part of the story and will remain part of the story. It's going to be interesting to watch how Taliban and Al-Qaeda react to ISIS's presence in Afghanistan in the future. One of the things that ISIS ran into was that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda actually limited their growth in Afghanistan by delivering them blows in eastern Afghanistan. And so that's one of the things we've been watching very carefully.
So right now we should conclude that ISIS is still at odds with Al-Qaeda. Is that correct? They're not working together in Afghanistan.
They're not working together. There's one caveat. The UN and there's some other reporting, not confirmed, that suggests that maybe the Haqqanis, who again are this key bridge between Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, they really exist in all these different organizations. The Haqqanis may have used ISIS or facilitated ISIS cells in executing attacks on civilians in Kabul and elsewhere that they didn't want to take credit for. They didn't want to take responsibility for. And there may be some sort of backdoor facilitation along those lines. That isn't proven, however, but, you know, something to watch out for. And it's certainly possible anyway.
I'm speaking with Tom Jossen, a senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. He and his colleagues, Bill Rajo and others, keep the Long War Journal, the chronicle, the diary of the contest with the Ummah these last decades. Right now we're concentrating on Afghanistan. When we come back, we need clarity about whether or not the Taliban is going to permit the Al-Qaeda to operate at will in Afghanistan one more time. You will recall that was the original driver for the U.S. getting involved, was to seek Al-Qaeda. There are contradictory reports around the world. It needs clarity all the time. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.